I help people fix things with whatever their problem is.
We take 25,000 breaths per day. Where do you see high performers going wrong when it comes to their breath?
They're not thinking about it at all. We don't think about which part of our face that we breathe through. Your breathing ultimately controls every function in our body. It's our energy levels.
Let's say I'm an exec on the way to a meeting that has some pressure around it, and I'm feeling the pressure. I'm feeling the anxiety of that. Does my breath change without me realizing it? And what can I do to get it back in the right lane?
People think money brings happiness. I've got a values exercise that I do with people, and I've probably done it with over 2,000 salespeople. And never, and I say literally never, have I ever had anyone have money as one of their final core values.
Michelle Flynn, thank you so much for being here.
You are very welcome. I'm very excited.
Me too. I'm very excited for this one. So we always start off our podcast the same way. Who are you and what problem do you solve?
I am Michelle Flynn, a health and performance coach. And it's quite a hard question, isn't it, that one? What problem do I solve? I help people fix things. With whatever their problem is. So it's more about their individual problems than me just solving one of them. So I fix stuff.
Okay, well, let's go a layer deeper. And let's imagine we're one of your clients. And if they were a patient and you were a doctor, what symptoms do they need to have to make it worthwhile talking to you?
They would likely be coming to me because they are stressed. They're not sleeping. They might be having panic attacks. They might be not thinking clearly, having no energy, and everything that is stopping them being able to perform in life, whether that is work or personal life, because those things are all interconnected now. So yes, they would be coming to me with those symptoms and just looking for some clarity on how to feel better.
Beautiful answer. Michelle, it's great to have you here. I want to get right into it, right into the nitty-gritty. We all breathe thousands, if not tens of thousands, maybe more. You might be able to give me the exact number.
25,000.
We take 25,000 breaths per day. Where do you see high performers going wrong when it comes to their breath?
The first thing is they're not thinking about it at all. Certainly when I first started doing breath work, no one really knew. I didn't know what it was. No one else knew what it was. I had my kind of moment of wow. And I think the first thing is people don't think about it, even though, as you sort of said, we're doing it a lot. We don't think about which part of our face that we breathe through, particularly when you're talking about salespeople who do a lot of talking. Most of the time, then they are breathing through their mouth, which is not the right part of the face to be breathing through. So it's the first thing when I'm coaching people. I need someone to breathe properly and I need them to sleep. And then we can build on how to become high performing. But that's like the absolute foundations, because of the way that your nervous system is managed and your breathing is directly linked to that, and your heart rate, which then is linked to adrenaline, and the sort of the cycle goes on. So it is literally the core. Otherwise, it's like trying to build a house and trying to put the roof on it, and you haven't actually built the foundations of the house yet.
So this might be a bit of a stupid question, but I'm trying to say it without sounding like an idiot, but
I've had all the questions, so do not worry.
I've done breath work. I've dabbled with it, and I've got my own kind of personal take on it and some of the highs and lows from it. But I guess for anybody that might be skeptical, why is the power of breath so important?
Because it ultimately controls every function in our body. It's our energy levels. So if you're not breathing properly, you're not oxygenating, you're not getting oxygen to every part of your body, to your muscles, which is where your little energy batteries get all charged up. So you won't have the right energy. Through to the fact that there is more tooth decay caused by mouth breathing than by sweets. So it's kind of everything, but it is the fundamental sort of biochemical behaviors and sort of the biology of the body, which we've got this large muscle across the middle, the diaphragm. No one thinks about training that. They just think about like repping in the gym and building up the biceps. So, but yeah, your breathing controls your heart rate, and your heart rate controls sort of how quickly the blood pumps around your body and how you're feeling. So it's pure science. And for me, when I trained as an Oxygen Advantage breathwork instructor, I chose that modality because it is all science. So whenever anyone looks at me a little bit uncertain, I'm like, let me get the diagrams out. And suddenly it's like, oh, everything from sort of your pupils down to your sex organs can be sort of positively impacted by breath work and every function of your body in between.
Wow. I just learned so much in that short paragraph. Okay. let's go into some of that then, right? So I want to give, maybe we could give a practical example of something. So let's say I'm an exec on the way to a meeting that has some pressure around it. I don't know, it's like a big sale, big deal, renewal, whatever it may be. And I'm feeling the pressure, I'm feeling the anxiety of that. Does my breath change without me realizing it? And what can I do to get it back in the right lane?
Yes, it will naturally start to sort of speed up. Most of the time we're breathing 16 to 18 breaths a minute, which is too quick. When we breathe through our mouths, which we often do when we're stressed and we're panicked and we start to try and get more air in, which actually you get less air in through your mouth, but we won't start doing the maths of sort of air volume. But when you breathe quickly through your mouth, it sort of it hits the top of your lungs. Nothing good happens there in terms of oxygen exchange. When you close your mouth, you breathe through your nose, it turbines the air down to the base of your lungs, which is where that's where the oxygen to carbon dioxide exchange is really powerful. So if you're about to go into a really stressful meeting, what happens is your breathing gets quicker, your heart rate gets quicker, you start to feel a bit stressed. And that can be a good thing, like a bit of adrenaline pumping before a big meeting. Not saying that's a bad thing, but it's when it goes too far, you stop being able to think clearly, you're preparing for a negotiation and you realize that you don't even know your numbers and you're going into a sort of an important meeting without any of the numbers. And actually being able to close your mouth, breathe through your nose. And it can literally just be a couple of nice deep breaths in and out of the nose. It starts to get more powerful the longer your exhale. So for example, breathe in for a count of four, breathe out of the nose for a count of six or eight. And what happens is when you're breathing in, your body is switching on. That's the sort of the fight or flight response, the energizer. When you are breathing out, your body is moving to the calm state. So the longer the exhale, the calmer your body, it opens up the part of your brain where you're able to think rationally and logically, and then you can go into the meeting and close the deal.
Interesting. Okay. And then is there the opposite? So let's say if I actually feel too relaxed going into something and I actually need to feel a bit more alert and awake. Is there an opposite style of breathing that would be better suited for that?
Yes, there's a really quick one. It looks a little bit suspicious, so you might want to be a bit careful where you do it. Okay. But basically, each nostril does something different. So if you want to feel energized, you shut your left nostril, couple of breaths through your right nostril, that's the energizer. If you want to feel calm, shut the other nostril, and that's the calm nostril. So you could literally, you're feeling too calm, you need to get a bit energized, a bit psyched up, right, quick, shut that. Breaths, that's what we're doing, a couple of that. And there are more. You can do breath of fire where you start to breathe. Like I'll put sort of a really fast track on and you're breathing in time to the music. It gets a bit snotty, but you're then really forcing your breath to be quicker, which starts to raise the heart rate, which gets the adrenaline pumping. So you can absolutely use it to calm your nerves. So you see it in sports. Novak Djokovic talks about it. LeBron James does it. Or you can use the opposite, which is, do you know what? We need some energy here. Your sales floor's all a little bit like flat. Monday morning, people have had a heavy weekend. Right, come on, let's get out. Let's get the breathing happening really quickly. And it is literally, and this was what happened the other day with a new company that I did a session with. And it was hilarious because the guy afterwards was like, oh my God. He said he felt energized for 2 days afterwards. And I'd just done like a short session. It was just a little intro. I didn't do the full, like, here we go. But yeah, it's unbelievable what you can do And you can do it on the tube if you're stressed out, because it's all a bit busy on the tube. And it is brilliant for sleep, for stress, for problem solving, for sports performance. There literally isn't anything that isn't improved by us breathing more optimally.
One of the things that you mentioned there, I don't think I was aware of, but when you were saying there, Michelle, to breathe in through the nose and then out through the nose, I'd always thought it was in through the nose, out through the mouth. So why is that not the case?
So always breathe in through the nose. Don't breathe in through the mouth. If you have to breathe out of the mouth, okay. The preference is in and out of the nose. The mouth is not part of your respiratory system. And if you are breathing out of the mouth, you're dehydrating. And when you're dehydrating, that's not great for the body. So, for example, when someone is breathing through their mouth when they're sleeping, they're likely to be snoring. They might have sleep apnea. They're certainly not going to get good quality sleep because they are sitting in the stress nervous system. They'll wake up with a dry mouth. They're completely dehydrated, about 65% dehydrated. Which is why when people have had a lot to drink, they go to bed, they mouth breathe, they wake up, they feel bad. Whereas if you are just breathing in and out of your in and out of your nose, then you are using, there are 30 different things that the nose does, and you are using them. So some of my breath work that I teach people, I will have them breathing out of the mouth, but it is very tactical to achieve a certain thing. Whereas all of the other time, it should all be in and out of the nose. And you should literally only have your mouth open if you are talking or eating.
Interesting. So if people feel like they've been listening to, we're only 11 minutes in and it's getting good, Michelle. If people are like, right, okay, well, I feel like I'm learning some of the breathwork routines and I kind of know when to use them, maybe but only when I'm really anxious or if I need a bit of a buzz. How best would you advise people to start implementing some breath work into their day-to-day routine?
So as with any new thing, any new habit, a habit is the solution to a problem we have. I attach it to another habit. So James Clear, who wrote Atomic Habits, talks about habit stacking. And to suddenly just expect someone to remember to do breath work throughout the day, it's not going to happen. So it might be every time you kind of go and fill your cup up, couple of breaths, or every time you come off a conversation with a client, couple of breaths. So it's kind of like drinking water and eating vegetables. If you just sprinkle it throughout the day, you're constantly bringing your nervous system back to its balance, rather than waiting. Oh God, now I'm having a panic attack. Quick, I should do some breath work. You're like, no, if we just do little bits of it, attach it to some, every time you go to the toilet, do a couple of breaths, because you're going to go to the toilet. That's how the body works. So actually attach the breath work when you're doing something you're already doing. And then you can get into all the fun gymnastic stuff where you feel like you're floating off the floor and your head's kind of fuzzing. That's great fun. But actually, let's just get the basics where you're keeping your nervous system balanced, because that's going to create success in life. Because if your nervous system is on high alert, it's like walking through a pub like with a pint. If this glass is like full of water, anytime I have a little bump because something's gone wrong, a call's gone wrong, or someone's annoyed me, that's my pint glass is spilling. It's like someone nudging you in the pub when you're watching the rugby and you've got a full pint. Whereas when you're doing breath work, it just keeps it there, keeps your nervous system here, which means that when the bumps happen, you're not going to spill the pint. So that's kind of how I explain it when people are like, I don't really understand the nervous system. It's the difference between like losing your shit in the day, which is your pint is full, or coping because your pint isn't quite full.
I love that. The analogies, you're well rehearsed.
And just to say, this is, look, it is water. This isn't a pint of beer.
There's no judgment. You're off duty.
Passports, all fine.
Exactly. So you've got thousands of hours of coaching behind you. And I imagine you've spoke to people from all walks of life and in all different situations. What have you noticed people are getting wrong when it comes to happiness?
This is quite a controversial one on this sort of podcast.
People, go on, hit us.
People think money brings happiness. I've got a values exercise that I do with people, and I've probably done it with over 2,000 salespeople. And never, and I say literally never, have I ever had anyone have money as one of their final core values. It might be achievement, ambition, hard work, financial security, adventure. And I am absolutely not saying don't go make money. I was in recruitment for 20 years. I was all about the money. But we often chase that to the detriment of our family life or our health. And when we look at what makes us happy, I studied a great course only because I wanted a certificate from Yale. I was like, "Ooh, this is fun." And it was a great course all about happiness. And it proves how the brain thinks, how we compare ourselves to others. And it breaks down what makes us really happy. And it is kind of the basics. And it's those things that sort of now as I'm kind of older, I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I can see that." Whereas in my 20s, I wasn't aware of any of that. I just wanted to sort of have a lot of money and a nice car and work really hard. But yes, it's about time brings us happiness, exercise, sleep, social connection, big one. We all noticed that during lockdown when we were suddenly restricted. Acts of kindness, like how good do you feel after you do something nice for somebody else? So actually happiness comes from a lot more basic things, but I absolutely appreciate that you need money to be able to pay the bills and survive and remove the stresses of life. But there's a limit with how much money you make. And basically when you hit that limit, which is kind of like the Maslow hierarchy of needs, can you afford to like live and clothe yourself and feed and look after your family? But beyond that, sometimes you can see that it's about priorities, and sometimes the priorities can get a little bit wrong. And then people would be contacting me going, "I've got all this money, I've got this great car, but I'm really miserable." And then it's like going, okay, how do we find that balance to make sure that you can enjoy all the money, but not at the detriment of your happiness?
Do you think that's because people are using money as a substitute for something else? I want the acceptance, I want the validation, or do you think it's something that we're actually getting wrong about the whole concept? Which one do you think it is?
I think a lot of that is that, particularly with social media, where it's sort of we're comparing our normal to someone else's 100 times filtered photo. And sort of, it was brilliant. My husband used to make sneakers, which is why I've got this weird sort of shoes up here. He made a shoe with Jamie Oliver, random.
Oh, wow.
As you do.
And the Jamie Oliver shoe. We should all remember it well.
Yeah, it's so odd.
Naked shoe? Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. We're going down a whole different route. We'll talk about naked running in a bit. But no, so there was this influencer, and it was fascinating because she had these pictures outside this amazing house and her life looked wonderful. And then my husband turned up to deliver her a pair of shoes, and her life looked very different to the Instagram photos. So I think there is partly we're comparing ourselves to other people. We feel our lives aren't good enough. Absolutely getting validation. But also it's kind of what we're told, isn't it? Go to school, work hard, get a good job, make loads of money. And particularly as someone who fell into recruitment, where it was all about make more money. Here's the targets. Here's the pay slips on the forehead. Here's your new car because you've hit a target. Which was all very lovely. But it's what we're told. Look at all these amazing people. Like, oh, look at who's the most sort of wealthiest rock star or the sort of highest earning movie star. Whereas, and it sounds really awful, but when people don't believe me when I say that sort of money doesn't sort of bring ultimate happiness, if it did, all of those really famous, really wealthy people would be really happy. And we know that that is not the case. So, sometimes it's about money, and then there are other things that people kind of use to bring happiness, alcohol, drugs, internet shopping, whatever it is. People have got their own different sort of addictions, and it's sort of how we can actually channel that into a more positive way to go, yeah, work really hard, make loads of money. I want all of my clients to make loads of money. Otherwise they can't pay me and that's going to not really work. So I want them to make loads of money, but I also want them to be happy. But fundamentally, I want them to be healthy, because if they're not healthy, then eventually they're not going to be able to make any more money. So we have to sort of find the balance, which I guess, going back to your first question around what problem I solve, I help people find that balance so that it's not all about money or all about one other thing. It's about connecting the dots between all of them.
You spoke about the values exercise, Michelle. So people are listening to this and they're trying to work out, well, what are my values? What do I stand for? What do I actually care about? How would they go about doing that at home? Could you talk me through that?
Yeah. So what I basically do is, and you can find these on Google, or if someone messages me, I'm happy to send you the exercise. If you go onto Google, it will give you an A4 document with about 100 words on. Words like integrity, trust, family, love, fun, loyalty, lots and lots of different words. And the way that I do it is I get people to highlight 20. So the 20 that just feel right. And that's generally quite easy because you're like, oh, this is fun. And then I get them to go from 20 down to 10. They find that really difficult because now you're like, oh, now I have to make choice. So then we get to 10, which they feel they resonate more with, or they feel stronger, more strongly aligned to. And then I get them to go from 10 to 6. And at 6, they're normally all like, yep, that's my core values. And then I'm like, right, let's go to 3. And it's that where you start to see, if you've got a situation that you have found really difficult, or a relationship you found really difficult, you start to see it's because the values weren't aligned. So if you've got a boss and your values are not aligned because your value is integrity, but your boss, he doesn't care about that. Or if you're a boss and you care about hard work and someone in your team isn't working very hard, that's going to annoy you more than it might annoy other people. And when I do that exercise with teams, it's brilliant because teams can start to see, oh, actually, that's what motivates that person. And we're all different. Everyone will always end up with different final threes. And when you start to become aligned to your values, then that's where the power really starts, because you start to feel the inner sense of, sounds fluffy, doesn't it? But inner peace. But it is, it's like, if I'm not living aligned to my values, I had some issues with some friends, I thought they'd all changed, I'd actually changed, and now our values were not aligned. So I was like, okay, well, those friendships need to be different, because every time I'm with them, I'm just like anxious and annoyed. And you get that. It's like when you're joining a business, we all see the values on the wall, but what's really the values of the founder? Because if, for me, health is obviously very important. So I would never go and join a business where the founder didn't fundamentally value health, because they're going to want me sort of not exercising first thing in the morning and being at my desk at 7 in the morning, which for someone else who doesn't care about health, or they exercise in the evening, that's fine. So I think it's really important. And LinkedIn, obviously, lots of people are posting, not necessarily always true. But you can get to know the leaders of the businesses and kind of go, do I resonate with them? And like Stephen Bartlett recently is a great example. He was really, really popular, not so popular at the moment, because suddenly people were feeling like, oh, it felt very aligned. He felt very genuine. And then suddenly it's all about just publicizing kind of whatever products that he is investing in. And for some people, oh, great, I'm really interested in that. Whereas for someone else, not so much. So, yeah, I just think it's a really simple exercise. As I said, if anyone messages me, I will send it to you. Or you literally go onto Google and just ask for words for a values exercise, and it will bring you up a sheet with loads and loads of words, and you just cut it down, cut it down. Whereas if I said, just give me 3, you'd pick 3. Whereas by doing it this way, you will probably end up with a different 3.
Me and Zach are at a first birthday together on Sunday, so I've worked out what we're going to be in the kitchen doing, Michelle. for the whole party, they'll come and they'll find us squabbling over our values.
As long as they don't find you standing there breathing through your mouth.
Yeah, exactly. Not at a first birthday. I hope that people are watching the video version of this. So I want to get into happiness. So when I say things, I'm not sure how fact-checked this is, so you might be able to correct me straight away. But I've heard that we kind of have a default base level of our happiness. And that can be down to a lot of it's genetics, external factors, et cetera, et cetera. So based on your childhood, the genes from your parents, you might have, and I know it doesn't work like this, but let's say, for example, Michelle, a baseline of 5 out of 10 happiness. So you get the fast car, you get the promotion, you get the dream job, or whatever it is. You might go up to an 8, but eventually over time you'll go back to a 5 because that's where your baseline is. So yeah. I guess it's a double-pronged question. I guess how true is that? And also, if someone's listening to this and they are thinking, my baseline is probably a 5, a 6, a 4, whatever it is, how do you improve that baseline? Because it feels like a lot of it is obviously going against a genetic formula.
You're absolutely right. The brain has a tendency, it gets used to things. So the first time someone tells you they love you, it's like, oh my God, it's like the best thing ever. Or you get your new car or you get your new iPhone and you're just like, this is amazing. And then after a while, it's just like, love you, bye. And you're just, so we literally, we get used to it. And that's kind of the science of kind of how the brain is, because that's a protective mechanism. The same as it works in reverse. If something really terrible happens, to survive as a human species, we have to be able to get used to it. So it works sort of increasing happiness or either way there. So the key thing with it is you kind of have to keep doing things. And this is why when you look at what actually makes you happy, yes, the nice new sort of Batman Rolex makes you really happy for a bit. But after a while, you're like, oh, I've just scratched the screen, or I now have to go and get it serviced for crazy amounts of money. And by that point, you're less bothered. It's just something that tells the time and that's lovely. So that's where when you really look at what makes you happy, exercise. Being around people that you like being around, it is like it's constantly filling the cup up a little bit, whereas we do one thing. And this is also another thing as to why experiences tend to make you happier than money, because you go on a holiday or you have some great experience and then you're going to talk about it. And then you've probably got some photos of it. And then you'll probably still keep talking about it when someone else is thinking about going there. So we're constantly having that chance to remember, oh, I remember that. I remember how great that holiday made me feel, because a lot of it is about the feelings. Whereas when you get something new, after a while, it's just the thing you have to clean and insure or whatever. So it's all about constantly putting new stuff in. And that's where I think people kind of have to get the balance that there's obviously a limit with how much time that we have available. I ask people to write a list of things that sort of make them feel good. What are the things that can take 2 minutes? Well, your favorite song, great. What's the things that take half an hour? Having a bath. What's the thing that's going to take a day? Okay, well, going on a long walk somewhere. The more that you know these things that make you feel good, then you just have to keep doing them is the answer. There's no one thing that's going to make you happy forever. Otherwise, like, people wouldn't get divorced, would they? You get married, you have the best day of your life on your wedding day, and then you would just stay happy. Whereas you have to work at it, same as in your job. You start a new job, you're like, oh my God, can't wait. I'm going to just be brilliant. And then after a while, you're like, oh God, this is really hard. I haven't hit my targets. I haven't got the commission I thought I was going to get. So you have to keep working at it. And obviously within work, we progress, we get promoted, we earn more money, we change to different company to make more money, or in a relationship, you potentially leave to go to a different relationship. But actually, if you kept working at that relationship, assuming it was the right person, then you can keep working on that happiness level.
Amazing. So one thing that came to mind then when you were talking about the different things people could do is, I think Instagram and social media is a funny thing where comparison feels more like the thief of joy than ever. And certainly if you've got kids and a busy life, adding yet another wellness practice or not quite getting to meditate or do your breath work or your ice bath or exercise, we can be quite cruel to ourselves about not kind of hitting all those markers. So what do you say to someone who's feeling a bit overwhelmed by, it feels like there's so many different things that I could do that actually I'm doing nothing and feeling really terrible about it?
Yeah, pick one of them. Don't try and do them all. I've got a life audit tool. It's on my website. And you go in and you audit 20 parts of your life, and it gives you a little spider diagram. And you can often see that if you made one change, it would positively impact multiple parts of your life. So if you joined a local gym, you might make new friends. You're now exercising, which probably makes you feel better physically and mentally, which probably means you're doing better at work, which then means you're making more money, which then means that you feel more joy, etc. And all you've done is join the local gym. So I will always say to people, like, don't come and tell me you're going to change 10 things because you're not. And don't tell me you're going to go to the gym 7 days a week because you're not. Let's look at what is actually realistic with the life that you've got, and let's see how we can really embed that. And when that just becomes habit, great, then we can add another one. But we also all have a tendency of going, I haven't got time. And I did some maths in a coaching session with someone the other day, and he said the one thing he needed to do at work to be better was his admin. Many people in sales are not great at doing the admin. And I said, okay, how long does it take to do the admin after a call? He said, 2 minutes. I said, okay, if you wait and you do that in the evening, how long does that take? And he said, probably 5, because I've got to remember and I've got to go on the system and find everything. Great. How many of those would you need to do in a day? He said, 10. I said, okay. So that's 30 minutes you're wasting by not doing the admin at the time and waiting till the evening. And he looked at me like, ah, what's 30 minutes? And then I did the maths over the year. I said, that's 3 working weeks. I said, so just by doing your admin, the minute you come off the call, you have just created 3 whole working weeks, which you can either work harder, make more money, or go on a nice holiday without feeling guilty for having time off work. So I do get it. We are all busy. But if anyone looks at their screen time on their phone and sees how much time they are wasting on Instagram, TikTok, even LinkedIn, like, I'm properly addicted to my phone. But we can find time when we prioritize. Like, if tomorrow you found your new best friend, or if you're single, you found the love of your life, you would find time to see them. And yet we say, I haven't got time to make healthy meals, get more sleep, whatever. But it is also about what is the one thing. And if you don't like it, like when someone says to me, oh, Michelle, I want to take up running. Oh, great. You like running. No, I hate it. Don't do running. There is plenty of other opportunities of things that you can do for exercise. So it's like, make it small, make it sort of, there was a great quote again by James Clear, is that make it something that you can do even on your worst day. So that might be a 5-minute kitchen workout. That might be a 5-minute dance around the kitchen with your child to some music of their choice. It might be 5 minutes drinking your coffee in the morning outside to get daylight, do a few breaths before you pick up kind of the laptop. So start really small and then build on it. And then suddenly it's like, oh, well, that's just what I do. Same with like flossing your teeth. It's like, oh, God, I won't bother. But you attach it to the habit of brushing your teeth. You start with flossing one tooth. And by the time you're flossing one, you might as well do them all. So, yeah, small, and attach it to something else. And don't make excuses. I think that's probably the most important. We all make excuses, and we are all busy. I absolutely get that. But when we look at how the brain works, if you are working 10 hours a day, nonstop, no breaks, eating lunch at your desk, back-to-back-to-back meeting, your brain is not fully functioning. Like, the scans are out there. If we look at flow state, you want to get into a flow state when you're doing your BD calls. When you come out of flow, you have to have a recovery period before you go back in. Just like sport, halfway through a football match, there's a break. Any sport, there's always breaks. And that's the whole point, is just to kind of recover, have a drink of water, do a couple of breaths, go back in again.
It's fascinating. I love the idea of looking at, you mentioned before, around looking at the positive impact of just joining the gym. And it might be one thing that has 10 different aspects of your life that it factors in on. And the other thing of time and looking at, well, how do we draw that back? I thought it was a great way of looking at things. Okay. So the path that you've been on is probably not the one that we would expect, right? So recruitment to then wellness, it's not the most common thing that we hear on the podcast. No. So what's the link? How did you end up where you've ended up?
Just by pure chance. It wasn't planned. I had my own recruitment business. All my clients were on exclusive. I worked with tech startups in London. I knew every developer in London. It was easy. I was making lots of money. I had one person working with me never wanted to grow the business. I'm a terrible manager. I was a manager in my 20s when I worked at Computer Futures, part of the S3 group, and was just rubbish at it. So demoted myself back to individual contributor. And then 10 years ago, I had my first collapse where my husband was on the phone to 999. I got rushed to hospital, thought I'd had a heart attack, severe pain on the left side of my chest. Turns out I've got a cyst on my heart, which are actually meant to be fairly normal. So you hear this and you're like, what? And then they're like, no, no, loads of people have them. It's just like, it's fine. So kind of then ignored that I'd collapsed and just carried on. And for 3 years, I wasn't right. I was tired. I was ill a lot. My memory was rubbish. I was gaining weight. And it was just like, oh, well, this is just life. I collapsed again. And this time I was like, okay, I need to do something about this. So kind of healed myself by going and getting help, working with a health coach, learning breath work, learning that I'd been over-exercising. Lots of kind of type A people. I want to go to the gym. I want to do high rocks. I want to go to Barry's boot camp. And you're like, okay, you need to actually look at some more restorative stuff. So just learned about myself and then started to study more and then became qualified as a health coach. Didn't plan to be one, but one of the senior directors at Moonpig that I was recruiting for asked me to coach him. And then it just sort of went from there. And eventually I was, and this was about 4.5 years ago now, I was like, okay, I'm done. I've been in recruitment over 20 years. This is time for me to sort of throw myself headfirst into being a coach full time. And I feel really lucky because I still get to talk to recruiters. I get to have lots and lots of fun. But I also get to be the other side where I leave the day job to them, even though a couple of them have tried to tempt me. They're like, do you want to come and sort of start up this new division or run our accounts? And every now and then when I think of the money, I'm a bit tempted. And then I realise that, no, I'm quite happy supporting people to be high performing. And I've done my time.
That's some journey, Michelle. I guess, what have you, when you look back on kind of where you were in those recruitment days and maybe when you weren't at the top of your health, what have been some of the biggest learnings about yourself throughout that kind of transitioning period?
I think actually even sort of taking time to pause. I didn't really do a lot of thinking. And here's a question I often ask clients, and it'd be interesting to see for you two, is how you hear your thoughts. Because do you have a voice?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's an annoying Cockney guy.
Okay, so I don't have a voice. And about 25% of the world don't. So about 50% have got a voice. 25% visualize and 25% feel it. So I'd just kind of gone through life feeling things. Oh, I feel like I should set up a recruitment business. I'm sure it'll be successful. No business plan. Off I went. So I think I'd just been on this. Like, I graduated. I fell into recruitment. I was good at it. I was making loads of money. I went in-house and made more money. I set up my own business and made more money. And it was just like, oh, I'm going. I'm having loads of fun. I've got living in London, loads of friends. And then your body goes bang. And I think it was learning to stop. And I took 2 weeks out. I went to Thailand on my own. I left my husband at home and I went to a retreat in Thailand. And for 2 weeks, I just thought about me, didn't have to think about anyone else. And it was so eye-opening. And yes, I learned things about sort of eat more vegetables, get more sleep. But I learned about how the body works and that we all have these warning signals. Like your car has got its warning signals when you're about to run out of petrol or your tires need pumping. We all have them and we ignore them. So it might be IBS, it might be panic attacks, it might be not sleeping, irritability, whatever. And we just ignore that. That's our body kind of going, hello, something's not okay here. So I think the biggest thing I learned was just to start to pay more attention to my body. And I think what happens is the minute we get a moment where we're kind of like bored, we pick the phone up. So you're not sitting on the tube just like mind wandering or standing in a queue for a coffee. You're just on the phone. So you never pause. And most of my coaching sessions are people just verbalizing what's going on in their head for them to then realize what the answer is. But they're not taking the time. And that's why I like things like the life audit or the values exercise, because it's just about reflecting. How do you feel? Why do you feel that way? How could you feel a bit better? And it's kind of like in men's circles, they often do pies, which is physical, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual. How do you feel across those areas? And that's where then you go, oh, if I joined the gym, all these other things would be better. Or, oh, if I had a bit of routine, then I would have time to get my job done, go to the gym, sort of spend time with the family. So yeah, you've got to reflect. Otherwise, you can't make any changes.
Nice. I love that. And then what have you learnt when you connect gut health to well-being?
Oh my goodness. It all starts there as well. So the body is mad, isn't it? Considering, so my husband has just had 18 inches of his colon removed. So I am very much working with him on the gut space at the moment. And the gut is where most of your immune system lives. It is where your serotonin is created. Your gut and your brain are linked through your vagus nerve. And they are talking all of the time, which is why we talk about gut feeling. But most of the messages are going upwards. So it's coming from your gut and going up, which is why we really should listen when our gut is telling us something. But then if we put loads of junk into our gut, which lots of processed food, saturated fats, kind of not great proteins, lots of sugars, our gut becomes really unhappy. And the best way to know is, what does it look like when you go into the bathroom? And it is like, so far, no one's ever sent me a picture, but I'm like, we know when it's like good, when it's clean and quick, as opposed to sort of when it's, you're not proud of it. Look at that and then adjust it. Because when that is working as it should, it means that your gut is doing what it's meant to be. And then that just means that, again, all of your body starts to function. Whereas, if your gut is unhappy, that's going to impact your ability to sleep. That's going to impact your mood, and ultimately can lead to kind of major mental health challenges. Because if we get a leaky gut, if the gut isn't like solid, then we get little gaps in sort of the gut lining, and then basically stuff gets into the bloodstream. It goes and attaches to the brain. Please eat fiber. It's like, get the fiber in. Don't care if you eat meat or not. That's not, people are always like, should we eat meat? Personal choice. Just eat the good stuff. Don't eat kind of like crap meat. But you've got to get the fiber in there, because that's what the gut feeds off. And we want to sort of, it's like a garden. You want to weed all the bad bacteria, take it out and replace it with all the good stuff.
We had the founder of Huel on the other week and he said the same thing about fiber. So you and him are singing off the same hymn sheet.
Do you know what? Where you mentioned that, whenever anyone says, have I got any regrets? I only have one regret in life. When Huel was really, really new, I was contacted by sort of someone very senior there to ask to go and would I run all their recruitment? And I said no.
Wow.
Because it's not in London. I didn't want to have to travel out of London. What an idiot. What a mistake. But I wouldn't be living by the seaside now, so it's fine.
Exactly.
But it is about that, and we underestimate it. We kind of, when it comes to health, I think it's like, oh, I'll deal with it later, or I'll deal with it when I crash. And actually, where my husband had this major, major surgery, he healed really quickly because he went into it already healthy. Whereas if you crash and burn and you're unhealthy, it's going to take you a lot longer to recover from that. Whereas sort of we're all going to have health bumps along the way. I got something called chikungunya, where I got bitten by a mosquito, and it's like dengue fever and full body paralysis. And they were telling me it would take me 12 months to sort of okay and 4 years to normal. And I was just like, no way. So I already was sort of healthy and then really focused on it. And 3 months later, I was doing yoga again. So we have to make it a priority. It's like, yeah, it's all about how many sort of dials you do and deals you close. But if you don't have the health bit there, then at some point your body's going to force you to stop.
Wow. Your life's a film, I think. Definitely in the making. Something going on here. I wondered if you would be uncomfortable doing a bit of breath work with me and Jack before we close out. Is there anything we can do quickly to give people a little flavour at home?
Yeah, let me think which one. Okay. I'm going to teach you the one that sort of my favorite. And have you heard of box breathing?
Mm.
Okay, so let me find, I also name it beer mat. Well, my husband names it beer mat breathing. I can't find it. Oh, here we go. There we go. We've got a beer mat. You can use a post-it note. The reason I'm going to teach you this one is often people have heard about it but kind of haven't tried it. So the most important thing, all in and out of the nose. If you are not able to breathe through your nose, contact me. There are lots of ways of adjusting that with mouth taping or with nose dilators or with clearing exercises. So there's lots and lots of different ways around that. But the idea is that you visualize in your mind a box. So this is great for sleep. So you're lying in bed, your mind's on overdrive, you're thinking about all the things that you've got going on that you didn't do today and you've got to do tomorrow. Lie there, really comfortable, close your eyes, and then are we going to do it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to have our eyes shut. I have to shut my eyes as well because otherwise I lose track. So, close your eyes and just relax your shoulders. Allow your body for a moment just to become aware of the fact that it is even breathing, because we breathe 25,000 times a day. We're mainly not even aware of it. So just notice that you are breathing in and out of your nose. You may notice the air temperature change as it enters your nose. You may notice the feeling of the air on the top of your lip. And already just by doing this, we are slowing down our breathing. We're sending a message to our brain to say we are safe. Keep doing that for a moment, and then we are going to start to breathe around the box. And I will count you through everything, but we're going to breathe in and we're going to hold, and we're going to breathe out of the nose and we're going to hold. So if you just exhale now, so we're all together, exhale, and then inhale for 4, 3, 2, 1. Hold 4, 3, 2, 1. Out 4, 3, 2, 1. Hold 4, 3, 2, 1. In 4, 3, 2, 1. Hold 4, 3, 2, 1. Out 4, 3, 2, 1. Hold 4, 3, 2, 1. In 4, 3, 2, 1. Hold 4, 3, 2, 1. Out 4, 3, 2, 1. Hold 4, 3, 2, 1. Now just go back to your normal breathing, just breathing in and out. Take one nice big deep breath in, little sigh out of the mouth. And when you are ready, wiggle your fingers and toes, open your eyes, and tell me how you feel.
Oh, I feel very relaxed.
Very,
very
calm.
Relaxed. Wow, very I've got relaxed. To drive home soon. I don't know how I'm going to do it. That's amazing.
Looks so zen.
Yeah, I feel it superb. In the space of a few minutes.
Wow.
And that's the point. It literally doesn't have to be 5 hours of silent meditation. It can be, that was 3 times around the box. Imagine doing that when you're lying in bed trying to get to sleep, or you come out of a stressful sort of meeting and you just need to calm yourself down. As I said, there's lots of different breathing patterns depending on what you want to achieve. But I like the box because it's also known as tactical breathing. It's done by the military. This is not hippie. This isn't just for yogis. This is for everybody. So that is my little intro for you.
Amazing. Amazing. So we've done a sales pitch there, a live one. Me and Jack are feeling very relaxed. We're not going to argue with each other. I might fall asleep at the wheel, but that is a sales pitch for you. If people have listened to this and they want to work with you, start the process of working with you, where's the best place for them to start?
So you can either find me on LinkedIn, or my website is michelleflynncoaching.com. I do one-to-one coaching, so you can go on my website and book a free intro call. I do lots of group talks around stress management or mindset or mojo. I've got about 18 different ones. I do breath work. So have me in and let's get some really sort of great house music on and get the energy really going. So contact me and tell me what it is that you're looking to solve. And we can talk through the best ways to solve that, whether that's individually or whether that's for your team or both, because that's where the real power happens, when I'm working with the team and with the leaders to be able to really create that high performing culture.
Amazing. This has been fantastic. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thank you so much.
You are welcome. Go and have a nap, lads.
I'm ready for it now. Where's my duvet?